Hello, Health Investor. Welcome to another episode of the Health Investment Podcast. Today, you're going to hear from Colin Corby, CEO and founder of Technology Wellbeing Limited, international TEDx speaker, and creator of the Digital Detox Coach. Colin is a technologist, digital well-being coach, and endurance triathlete based in the United Kingdom. He's fascinated by the collision between technology and psychology and how this relationship is changing our world, our health, and even the way we think. Colin is passionate about helping people and organizations achieve a healthier, more productive, and ethically sustainable relationship with technology. In the episode, Colin shares practical strategies for using your phone less, how to engage in digital detox snacks, the role of your environment in terms of phone and social media use, and more. If you're liking this podcast, I'd be so grateful if you'd write a review and share it with a friend. Enjoy the episode.
Simonson, certified nutrition coach and your host of the Health Investment Podcast. If you're ready to look and feel your best without any confusion, frustration, or stress, you're in the right place. Each week, I interview experts and share no-nonsense, research-backed tips so that you can finally lose weight for good, eat healthy long-term, have the high energy you crave, and feel like a million bucks. I'm so happy you're here with me today. Don't forget to hit subscribe so that you never miss an episode.
Hi, Colin. Thank you so much for joining me today on the Health Investment Podcast.
Hi, Brooks. I'm really pleased to be here.
Excited to have you. Yeah, across the pond.
To you.
Yeah, you're evening there, and we are, I guess, late morning, you would say, but always fun to connect with people overseas. I think that's kind of the joy of one of the perks of technology. We're going to talk a lot about technology today and how to use it in a way I think that serves you. But one of the perks I think we could agree is that we get to connect.
Absolutely. I used to work for British Telecom International. So I was involved in putting the first digital transatlantic cables and satellite links in.
Oh my gosh.
So communications is in my background.
Yeah, how incredible. And just to think how far we've come in not that many years in being able to communicate with people all over the world, especially useful, you know, these past years through COVID, that we can still stay connected with family and friends, even though we might not be able to see them physically. But yeah, what a blessing it can be. But also, as I'm sure we'll get into, it can also take over your life in certain ways. So I'm curious to hear what you have to say. And would love if you could start off by telling us a bit about your background and specifically what led you to become a digital detox coach.
Okay. So this story, and it's a brief one, goes back to when I was in my mid-30s. I have a long career in technology, but I suffered stress. But it was in the days when you didn't talk about stress. People didn't know what it was. And so what I found is I was passing out at work, and I thought, this is really odd. Had the usual checks, nothing found. So I thought, I need to do some exercise. And I found that by doing exercise, and it was mostly swimming, that and training the heart and the body, that actually it sorted out all the stress. And this fascination with mind-body came in. So, oh, that's interesting. But then I got well into exercise and I thought, well, how far can you take this? And then I took this mindset approach and I ended up doing four Ironman triathlons, which were really silly. they started in America, but they are really, really
silly. Yeah, that's a lot.
And so I was fascinated by the psychology of the mind. And then when I got my smartphone, I sort of noticed how much I was using it and how much I was drawn to it. And I said, wow, I'm into technology. And yet all of a sudden, this technology that I'm holding has this sort of pull on me. I thought, that's really interesting. Bearing in mind that I was into mindset and all the other things. So I did various research into it. And then I had an opportunity of leaving the corporate world and deciding what I wanted to do. And I was being coached at the time and I was looking at corporate roles. And after a couple of months of coaching, I said, you know what? I don't want to do that. Actually, I'm really fascinated by the collision between technology and psychology and the mind-body connection. And that's what I really do want to do. So in 2018, I created the Digital Detox Coach to try and get behind the psychology of the global technology companies. Why was it we found our smartphones so attractive? And what were the consequences? And how could we achieve a better balance? Because we all have to connect to live in the modern world. Right. So we have no option. We have no option in the modern world. We've got to be connected. And so how do you get a balance? And that was what the driving force behind me getting into digital detox was.
Wow. Yeah. So I think people might be reassured. Maybe they were a little skeptical to click on this episode because they're thinking, is this guy going to tell me I have to give up my smartphone or social media? So what do you mean by digital detox? Are you suggesting you give up certain apps or your phone or computer, television completely? Or is it finding a balance? What does that mean, a digital detox?
So there's a couple of terms in there. So the definition of digital detox is just being disconnected.
Okay.
Now, it would be great if we could all go for weekends away and have no phones, or take a week's holiday. And actually, if you are on holiday, it's quite easy to do those things. But it's not practical for when we're working, because most people work using laptops.
Mm-hmm.
So what I'm sort of pursuing is this idea of digital detox snacks, which is regular breaks in screen use to take a digital detox. And it doesn't mean, oh, I'm not going to work on my work screen, I'm going to pick up my smartphone, because that's just changing one screen to another. And lots of people do that. No, it's to come off one screen, and we'll go on to it later on, is to get up, to take a drink of water, to go for a coffee, to talk to someone and all those things. And just for a short break, and do regular short breaks. Mm. So digital detox is something that you incorporate to create a far better balance. And it's a balance between what we have to do in the modern world and be connected. And I'm connected the same as everyone else. And I'm affected the same as everybody else about online activities. And to balance that with who we are as biological beings and what we need to be able to thrive.
Yeah. That seems very reasonable. So now you've got everybody back on board. I think everybody, if we're being honest with ourselves, can realize too much digital use of any type isn't really serving us in many ways. Mm. You mentioned social media and the impact it can have. I think, do you kind of divide digital into different worlds? So is it kind of, there's social media, there's email, does television count? Is it kind of in different buckets, or is it just kind of all of it together?
So if we look up, what are the indirect consequences of being online?
Mm-hmm.
And you could argue some of them also apply to TV, long-term TV, because we watch TV online now in terms of streaming services. So there are indirect consequences, because you don't get ill directly by being online or looking at a smartphone. So the indirect consequences, and the really big one, is lack of movement.
Mm.
We're just sitting down. We're just looking at the screen, or we're bending down and we're looking at our smartphones. And certainly in the UK, people today are 20% less active than they were in the 1960s. And the projection is 35% less active by 2030. But why should we be worried about that? Well, several hundred thousand years of evolution have created a body that's absolutely dependent on moving around. And so if we don't move around, then the body doesn't function properly.
Mm-hmm.
And the chief medical officer in the UK, and I'm sure the surgeon general in the US, will say that actually inactivity accounts for as many deaths in the long term is smoking.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's, so the first one is inactivity. The second one is cumulative stress. So if we're sitting and we're sitting down on screens all day and we're not taking any breaks, then the stress from one Zoom call or one meeting or one activity then gets compounded by a back-to-back meeting or another activity. And so stress builds up and we end up taking that stress home with us. And because there's so many distractions, we multitask. Mm-hmm. And of course, the brain actually doesn't multitask. It switches tasks quickly. And Dr. Gloria Mark did lots and lots of research about the effects of multitasking. And it build up a stress. So when we keep changing from one task to another, the end result is more stress. So the other area is because of all the distractions and because of being on the street, it's more stress. And then the next indirect one is sleep.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we look at our smartphones before we go to bed, when we get up. And so it's that stimulation and we find it more difficult to get to sleep. And sleep is so important. It's the time when our brain works just as hard as when we're awake, but it does flushing, it does cleaning, it consolidates memories and all those other things. Hmm. So it affects our sleep or can affect our sleep if we don't set boundaries. And the last one, and there was a great report from the US Surgeon General about the loneliness epidemic.
Hmm.
And it's and in his report, he said, isn't it amazing that we're in a world where we can connect more than ever before?
Mm-hmm.
But actually, the level of loneliness is increasing all the time. Now, during COVID, being able to connect online was a godsend.
Mm.
How would we have got through COVID? And particularly in the countries where you have lockdowns, where you're able to have lockdowns, and you could only go out of your house, how could people survive without it? But the truth of the matter is, it's more of a shallow communication level. And as biological animals, we need the real thing. We need physical connection with other people. So being online should be seen as additive rather than a replacement. And so the fourth indirect one is really human connection. So I just know, say those four things
mm-hmm.
associated with that.
I think we can all relate also to when COVID first happened. I know a lot of us were hopping on Zooms with maybe 5-6 other people to try to have little dinner parties or game nights.
Yep.
And it was exhausting because it's really hard to connect and communicate accurately on Zoom versus having 5 or 6 friends over to your home and having a dinner party or a game night. It's just the allure wore off, I think. And all of us were like, don't invite me to another group Zoom. I do not want to go to one of those. I'll just wait until we can see people in person again, or I'll talk to one person at a time. It's just, this is kind of like Zoom fatigue.
Yes, yes. But if you take the older generation, and because they were not able to get out and have any visitors, mm-hmm. There's lots of research to say that being able to speak to someone and communicate with someone when you're older is one of the most active things you can do for the mind. Mm-hmm. So I started ringing up my mother every day because at least she spoke to one person every day, and I'm still doing it.
Oh,
I mean, I see her at the weekends anyway, and my sister sees her at the weekends anyway. But the research behind being able to communicate is a really strenuous activity for the brain. And especially as you get older, you need to do that more. So, yeah, so it was being able to communicate doesn't have to be online. It can use old-fashioned telephones and voice. But it is very, very important.
I want to take a quick break from the episode to tell you about a company I've been impressed by for years. Thrive Market is an online shopping platform that offers thousands of products at 25 to 50% off retail prices. For just $60 a year, you get access to a wide variety of premium pantry staples, supplements, beauty products, and home goods at unbeatable prices. To put things in perspective, I save about $20 to $30 per shipment, which means my annual membership fee pays for itself after just two orders. My favorite part about Thrive Market is that for every paid membership, they donate a membership to a low-income family, veteran, or teacher. So not only do you save money on your purchases, but you also make healthy products accessible to everyone. To read my full Thrive Market review, steal my shopping list of over 150 items, and save additional money on your first order, visit thehealthinvestment.com/Thrive Market or just click through the link in the show notes. Now, back to the episode.
And the case you make, I think, I love how you call it a digital detox snack. So I work in the nutrition and weight loss space, and I'm often talking to clients about movement and how could you just even get an, I call it an exercise snack or a movement snack. So between your Zoom meetings, could you go for a 10-minute walk or even walk around your office, even if you have 5 minutes, right? Anything counts. It all adds up.
Absolutely.
And I love this idea of a snack.
And a digital detox is an enabler. So a digital detox is you're going offline. But you're not going offline just to sit there doing nothing. You're going offline to do something else. You're going to grab a coffee. You're going to talk to a person. You might do some exercises. You might do something else. So digital detox is an enabler for these other things. Because it's the other things that are important.
And when you make the case for it and you say it can help you move more, reduce stress, sleep better, and be more connected, I don't think there's one person in the world who would argue with any one of those things. You know, everybody has different ideas about what you should be eating and the best type of exercise, all these different, you know, conflicting opinions flying around. But I don't think a single person would say any one of those things is bad. And if social media has, or digital devices in general, have the ability to impact one of those areas, and I'm sure, you know, as I'm listening to you, I'm thinking, oh yeah, this area is one that could be improved with less screen time for sure. I'm sure listeners are thinking, oh yeah, maybe my stress would be reduced if I used my phone less or whatever. I think we can all identify areas that we can improve just by doing a little digital detox every now and then.
And now the reason why it can be so difficult is, and I love this, our short-term memories can only remember between 4 and 7 things, or the last 30 seconds. It varies on what it is. So, I mean, we've all had it. We've gone to our phone because, I don't know, we want to check the weather. But before we know it, we may have checked the weather, but we've looked at our emails, we looked at the notifications on this app and that app and that app. And quite often we forget why we were looking at a phone. And certainly we've spent more time than we want to. And the reason is because the apps, in order to be, they've got to have good content that we would like, but they also know how to trigger responses, and certainly when they become habits. And so you go to your phone thinking you're going to do one thing, and you end up doing loads of other things, and it's like a rabbit hole. I got a great challenge, which is part of a challenge series I've got, and it's called the Just One Thing Challenge. And if you consciously pre-plan something, then you're more likely to be able to interrupt a habit. So if you have the Just One Thing challenges, you can do anything on your phone that you want to, but you can only do just one thing. And after you've done that one thing for the time that you said you wanted to do it, you can't do anything else. And it's devilishly hard.
Because checking the weather takes 5 seconds, and then you got to put it away.
I know, and then you'll say, I want it. And then, of course, if you do check something else, I just think you should laugh and say, oh no, my phone got me again.
Right. But I think that's a really good point. these apps are designed to be addictive in a way, to give us the best content, to show us things we want to see. And so before you know it, you've been 20 minutes in Instagram when you literally just picked up your phone to check the weather.
Yes. And we have to be careful with the word addiction.
Oh,
because
okay.
we use it in common speech, uh-huh, and common conversation, but it's a medical term.
That's true.
And
right.
So for digital activities, it's just bad digital habits, really.
Bad digital habits.
99% okay. of people. There are a couple of exceptions. I think there's a pornography addiction, which being online seems to encourage. And there's gambling addiction, which is a predefined thing, which online also encourages as well.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not being online per se, because those are actual addictions.
That's a really good point. What are some other strategies? I love the just one thing. Is that something somebody could start today where they say, I'm going to pick up my phone and do just this one thing and then put it down?
Yes. So strategies.
Yeah.
So the strategies for using your phones less starts off with self-awareness.
Mm.
And so just to become mindful about how you're using your screen time, because if you ask someone, oh, how long are you on your phone and what do you do it for? They'll underestimate. The research says it's always an underestimate.
Mm-hmm.
Now, there are some apps, Google and Apple do a screen time app, but it's a bit of a rough measure. It says how much time, but it doesn't say if you take any breaks. It doesn't say if the time was useful or if you wanted to do it. So it's a little bit of a coarse measurement. Now, the thing about undoing digital habits is that you have to use the same techniques that created them. So you have to create different habits, and different habits are to do with causing interrupts, conscious interrupts by pre-planning an activity, and also repetition.
Mm.
So if you could say, look, I'm going to have a digital detox week, and I've got a 9-week program, and so 1 week would be the Just One Thing challenge. So you decide how many days you want to do the challenge within the week, and you do the Just One Thing challenge. And then the next week you keep doing that challenge, but you do another one on top. Because for habits, if we have to think about things all the time, then we're going to relapse.
Mm-hmm.
Because the bad digital habits are habits. So we actually have to modify them or replace them with other habits.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's repetition for that. The other one is environment. So if you've got a phone in front of you or near to you, research has shown that the mere presence of a phone, even though you're not consciously thinking about it, will exert some cognitive load.
Mm-hmm.
And the work by Dr. Gloria Mark was also said that if you don't get distracted by external stimulations, notifications, and all those sorts of things, we'll actually got so used to interruptions that we'll interrupt ourselves. So if you have your phone close by, then it enables you to interrupt yourself because you can just pick it up automatically before realizing it. Or we'll have to be busy. And if we're busy, we don't have to think about, you know, really important things or serious things. So we keep ourselves busy. So that fuels multitasking and looking at phones. So environments, if you didn't have your smartphone physically with you, if it was in a different room or if it was out of sight, then that attraction won't be there. So that's a good strategy.
Mm-hmm.
You can think of it like, I like chocolate. If I had my favorite chocolate bar sitting on the table all the time, do you think I wouldn't actually have some?
Right.
And if it was a refillable chocolate bar, I'd be eating an awful lot of chocolate. So the smartphone is so attractive that we do that. So environment. The other one is to work out what you really want to do. You know, what do you enjoy doing? What do you really want to do? And then you prioritize those things. And when you're doing something interesting, because the brain receives millions of bits of information from all the senses, but we can only pay attention to a very tiny fraction of them. So if we occupy ourselves doing something we like, an activity or a conversation or a coffee, then actually we've not got the capacity to worry about our phones. And so, work out what it is that you want to really do and do that instead. Do something you enjoy. Later on, you can be comfortable with doing nothing and boredom, but that's very difficult for most people.
Yeah, for sure. I love the environment one and just being more conscious of your phone's presence and how accessible it is. I think, again, everything I go back to nutrition. So like the chocolate bar, you know, research says that just even relocating different snacks or arranging your refrigerator different so that you don't have the fruits and vegetables in the bottom drawers and they're at eye level. All these tiny little environmental changes can make a huge impact in how we eat and therefore our health. And the same goes for a phone. I read similar research that said, you know, even if you're eating dinner with your partner and both of you have your phones on the table and nobody's looking at them, it does kind of suck an energy away because you're both aware that at any second, the person might pick up their phone. And I've just really noticed that now. I mean, my husband and I are very intentional. When we sit down to dinner, we don't have our phones on the table. But if we go out with friends and they sit down and their phone's on the table and it's lighting up, I mean, you just, the second somebody picks up their phone, it just kind of feels like the energy is sucked a little bit from your conversation or the community as a whole.
Yes, the attention goes. It's quite usual if you go to a restaurant and you might even have two people, two good friends or a couple, and they're both on their phones. Or you have a group of friends and they're all on their phones. It's sort of a habit thing. But if you do go out with a group of friends or even your family, you can ask them, well, okay, if you're chatting to someone and they pick up their phone, how does it make you feel? And if I'm in the middle of a conversation and someone picks up the phone, if it's an emergency or something really, really important, that's okay. But if it's, oh, well, something, you know, some nice dog appeared on Instagram or something, and you say, well, yeah, but aren't I important? I'm your friend. Wasn't what we were saying is important. So I think discussing how people feel, and then if you take a family situation, there have been studies where, and it's so important for parents to lead the way. There's been studies that say, well, if a child wants a response from a parent, but the parent's busy on their phone, and it could be work, it doesn't have to be social, then there's that feeling of rejection. And that's a hard one, really, for children.
Definitely.
So, yes, there's the whole feeling about, you know, when did it become culturally normal to do that? And let's question it. And in certain situations, let's say, actually, it's not really acceptable. We shouldn't be doing it.
Even watching a movie, if my husband and I are watching a movie together, we're both very conscious not to be checking our phones. Because even though it's a different type of digital space, right? Your television, it kind of changes it. If you're watching a movie and the other person's on their phone, they're not really watching the movie. So you're not kind of experiencing it together in the same way.
And you can see the screen in the corner of your eye. You can see the screen.
Yeah. So we very much try, you know, let's not be on our phones. And then it inevitably one of us picks it up without even thinking about it. And the other one will say, oh, do you want me to pause it? You know, or do you have to check something? Just to kind of remind the person,
yes,
we've kind of agreed not to be on our phones. And maybe they did have a work email or something pop in that they need to address. But if it's just kind of like, oh, should we pause it for a second? Do you want to deal with that? We're both just very aware of it now, of if we're watching a movie, we're watching a TV show together, we're eating dinner and somebody's picking up their phone. It's just, it feels kind of weird. Once you get used to not doing it, you kind of notice more when it starts happening.
And actually it's also to do with shortening attention spans. And there's lots of research, again, by Gloria Mark. And for information workers, I think the attention span on average is about 47 seconds on a screen. But she did an interesting piece where she got a company to agree to close down the emails on one day, which is amazing. And she found that the without emails being available, the attention span went back up. So emails is famous for causing stress, right? Whatever strategies you use. And the fact that they were able to switch them off for a day, the attention span went out and stress levels. And she measured stress using heart rate monitors. And she used the technique of measuring the gap between each beat. And the gap between each beat should vary because we might have to react very quickly. So that means that the heart is able to do it. If the gap between the beats is pretty consistent, then that indicates that you may be unfit or there may be some other problems. Now, the reason why I was really interested in that is because when I run, and I use the old-fashioned chest heart rate monitors. Mm-hmm. So I thought, oh, I wonder if I can get an app to test this. Because I always used to say to my wife, she caused stress sometimes. Apparently I was wrong. According to this test.
Yeah, how funny.
Outside of hosting this podcast, I work as a nutrition coach specializing in evidence-based, sustainable weight loss. If you're ready to stop yo-yo dieting and start living a healthy, active lifestyle you're proud of, I'd love to work with you in one of my programs. Unlike restrictive, one-size-fits-all diets that only provide short-term results, I help you adopt science-backed nutrition and lifestyle habits that work for your unique likes, dislikes, and time constraints so you can lose weight permanently, have high energy throughout the day, feel completely in control of cravings, and stay consistent long-term. To learn more, visit thehealthinvestment.com or follow me on Instagram and TikTok at The Health Investment.
I mean, you mentioned emails. I think that would be something good to talk about. I'm often talking to clients about sleep habits, stress, you know, all these things are kind of intertwined with their nutrition, health, weight loss journey. And often they'll say something like, but my boss emails me at 9 p.m. at night. I have typically found if you have a conversation with your boss, I mean, okay. So the thing I think happens is people have a free hour, maybe their kids have gone to bed and they think, I'm just going to answer all these emails so that I don't have to think about it and I can sleep well. But then the person who receives your email feels like they have to respond immediately. And so I've worked with so many clients who have just talked to their boss and said, hey, I know you send an email at 8 p.m. I am not going to respond to it until the following morning. And usually the boss is like, oh yeah, absolutely. I'm just sending it. You know, if the boss were smart, I think they would probably time delay the email to send at 8 a.m. rather than 8 p.m. Maybe that's, I don't know if you're going to tell your boss to do that, but I think that's a good strategy that can work for people because I know my husband's old boss used to answer emails at or respond to emails at midnight and he wasn't expecting a response. He was just up working.
Yep.
But if you receive it, then you think, oh my gosh, I have to, my boss just emailed.
so we project onto notifications and messages about the fact that they need to be responded to immediately, but we don't check often. And you're quite right. In I would suggest most cases, if you had the conversation, you send me emails. Do you really want me to respond? And the answer is no. I did the email because I was thinking about it at that time. I just wanted to put those thoughts down and just get it out.
Totally.
And so there's the mismatch between what people perceive they have to do and what the intention was. There are companies where they do expect you to respond to them,
yeah.
and those companies might be slightly toxic, perhaps. Mm-hmm. And there's a whole different problem there. But generally, to actually understand the culture, what is it? What, you know, what does your boss actually want? And most bosses who are good people managers will say, no, it's just I needed to get my ideas down. Of course, it's the normal work. I want you to be refreshed. I did a workshop last week, and it was on distractions and productivity. Mm. And I introduced the idea of work being similar to an endurance sport. Well, how do athletes make sure they're at their best when they're doing their particular sport? Mm-hmm. So isn't what we're doing at work really important? So if you've got something really important coming up, you know, like an athlete, we get a good night's sleep the day before if it's an important meeting or something like that. You know, if we're going to do some important work in the morning, we're going to make sure we have a proper breakfast. So this mind-body connection. So I'm trying to get the idea that actually by having a boundary and switching off from work, you're only consciously switching off. Mm-hmm. Everything that you've done during the day, all your experiences, is all rattling around in the unconscious, and they'll be consolidated during sleep. And it may be that a problem that you've been working on, the answer will suddenly pop into consciousness the following day. And that's how creativity works, by the associations made in memory. So being able to switch off and do other things actually improves productivity. Mm-hmm. And so if you can get that sort of concept that we're not shirking work at all, they're actually, we're doing something to improve work. And it's a sort of a mind change, it's a reframing.
A reframing, right. Mm. And I think I did have one client who talked to their boss, and their boss said, great point. I've been trying also to use my phone less, you know, so like, or to email less at night. And what you're talking to me about is something that I currently struggle with, and I want to work on as well. You know, I think the majority of people, if they're being honest with themselves, know checking out at some point is a healthy thing to do. So if you're approaching somebody and saying, hey, I really need this for my mental health and my productivity to stop working at X time, typically the person's not going to say, no, you're insane. You don't need that. Now, like you said, some companies probably will, but I hope they're outliers at this point. I hope that's not the norm. I really like the way you frame this, and you say, come up with things you want to do more of. I think that could be a really inspiring way to look at this. It's, you know, kind of scary even to release something and then think, okay, I'm not going to look at my phone, so I just have to sit there. You know, like, what am I supposed to do? But if you think, no, I'd actually like to move more. I'd like to read more. I'd like to call my friends more rather than texting with them. And then I know a couple of years ago, I had a goal of reading more, and I started to use my phone less and to read more. And it was very interesting. I would post books on social media, and I would talk about my reading habits, and so many people would respond and say, oh, you have the luxury. I don't have time to read. But then if you really get into it, a lot of people are spending those hours on their phones. They actually do have time to read. You know, it's like how you allocate your time. It's not that I just have abundant extra hours.
I think everyone, I did a challenge. We said, would you like 30 minutes extra every day? And then I explained where the 30 minutes was.
Mm-hmm. Everybody has, you can find it. And yes. Sure, it's more challenging for some than others. If you have, let's say, different stages of life, if you have a newborn or very young kids, or, you know, if your partner's traveling for a few weeks, I mean, there's going to be these outlier times when you don't have as much time. But even I used to look at my phone for 30 minutes to an hour before I would fall asleep. And then I decided I want a book to be the last thing I do before I close my eyes. So I now set my alarm. I do check the weather. I usually check social media, but then I turn my phone off and I pick up my book with my book light and I read, even if it's 5 minutes, even if I'm so tired, the book is the last thing I do before I sleep. So sometimes it's 5 minutes, sometimes it's 45 minutes, but I read every single night and that takes me into sleep.
Reading is so good because if you are tired and you do read, you're going to go to sleep. But there's a hidden thing with reading.
And, what's the hidden thing? Because I feel like there's a hidden thing. I feel like it's this magical thing. What is it?
When we read a physical book, we have to employ deeper cognitive resources. So there's characters in the book, and the way that we get into those characters is that we have to take them inside. We have to feel what the character feels. We have to we always have a voice for all the characters in a book. We have to feel the emotions, and we have all those things. And those things are slower cognitive processes. And reading is one way to start to increase your focus and attention. When you read online, and then studies have shown that we scan. There's a Z pattern is one of them you scan. And then we're looking for hyperlinks, or we're distracted by the adverts, or something. So it's a totally different experience, and it's much shallower. But when you're reading a book, you're spending more time and you're going into those deeper cognitive processes of emotion and picturing what's happening in the group. So it's great for improving your focus and attention.
I think it's meditative in a way that, like you said, reading on a screen or looking at a screen, even if I read on a Kindle, I feel like it's not as meditative and relaxing as reading from a physical book. And maybe now what you just said, maybe it's because there are lines that are underlined that other people have said, this is a cool passage, or you can click and you can look up the definition of a word. I feel like it's much more interactive.
Yes.
And it kind of takes me away from the story versus a physical book. All I have is the page and my eyes. It's not, there's nothing distracting me from that page.
And it's sort of physical form and a presence. So it's almost like part of the world, isn't it? It's you carry it around with you. It's got a texture and all of those other things.
Yeah, it's pretty incredible. I never would have thought. I mean, I used to call myself a horrible sleeper. I was pretty bad at falling asleep. I wouldn't stay asleep. I wouldn't fall back asleep in the night if I got up to go to the bathroom. And it's very incredible how just having a physical book between my phone and falling asleep has completely transformed my sleep. And I always say, like, I don't know what's happening. I do not have the research. I do not know what's going on in my brain, but it helps me fall asleep faster. It helps me fall back asleep in the middle of the night. I would now say I'm a good sleeper just by that one change. And again, sometimes I read for 5 minutes. It's pretty incredible. The perks we can get. Yeah.
My daughter sometimes falls asleep on two pages.
I know. Last night I picked it up and I read two pages. I was like, I'm not going to be able to read, but I still, no matter what, read two pages. So really incredible. But I think my takeaway from this is if you start to identify what is it that I do want to have more time for and I want to prioritize, and then you start finding these snacks of time and or changing your environment. So if it's leaving your phone in the kitchen while you're on the couch, even watching a show with your partner, or, you know, so it's not just your phone's not just at arm's length at all times, or committing, you know, when you walk into a restaurant to leave it in your purse rather than put it on the table. All of these things seem very tangible and easy to do with just some intention.
I did a joint TEDx talk with a very good colleague of mine in the US, and it was at the Lake Superior State University, and it was on identity. And so it was sort of combined sort of a forward look about where technology was going to take us and does it change who we are. But at the end of it, the recommendation was that if we could all create somewhere in our apartments or houses, just an area where there's no technology. Mm-hmm. There's no smartphone, there's no smart speaker, no smart watches, no smart toys.
Mm-hmm.
And so that area, that environment, you know, is a place to go, and you can have books there, you can talk there, and all those other things. And I call it a sanctuary.
Mm-hmm.
And with advances in artificial intelligence, it would be very easy to be fully occupied online 24 hours a day, because you then start to imagine that the AI, which is just a program that does mm-hmm. calculations, it has some intelligence and is talking to you, and then has, because we project things, and mean something, when right. of course it doesn't.
Right. Yeah. So many great points. I've loved this conversation. One of the final questions I ask each of my guests is, in your opinion, what does it mean to make the health investment?
Okay. So I'm going to go out there on this one. So
great.
We make the mistake of thinking our latest and greatest technology is how humans work. So it started off clockwork and mechanics, then it went to electronics. And now we think the brain's a computer. Well, it's not. We're amazing biological beings.
Uh-huh.
And we've got this mind-body connection. And actually, through our microbiome, we've got a connection with the earth as well. So the health of our bodies impacts the health of our minds.
Mm.
So in order to perform at our best in life in general and get the most out of life and have a healthy life, then we need to get off of our screens and our smartphones and get out there and look after our health. We need to exercise, we need to sleep, we need to have good nutrition. We have to keep learning and challenging ourselves.
Mm.
And then we'll get the most out of life.
I love it. Where can listeners follow and find you?
So, and now this is the irony of it. This is, now I'm going to say that the website.
Okay.
So the website is thedigitaldetoxcoach.co.uk. If you did .com, you'd end up at the same place.
Okay.
Now on there, there's lots of free resources, but I'm true to my word. There's no tracking.
Mm.
At all.
Cool.
So you can go there, you can download some free resources. My couch to 5K.
Mm-hmm.
Now in the US, you've adopted park runs,
oh.
which started in the UK, which is a group of volunteers got together in a park, and people can run, well, we call it 5 kilometers, 3.1 miles.
Uh-huh.
And run by volunteers. There's no charge. Anyone can do it. You can walk it and all the rest of it. And it started in one park. Hundreds of thousands of people do it in the UK. And many parts of the world, including some parts of America, exactly the same thing.
Hmm.
So doing things like that with other people are amazing things. So, yeah, just get out there and live.
Absolutely. Well, I will link your website, that free guide, the Digital Detox Couch to 5K. I know you're also on social media. I'll put those links there as well in the show notes, so they're easily clickable. But I just want to thank you again so much, Colin. I have so much food for thought leaving this episode. I'm sure listeners do as well. And we're all going to start thinking of more ways to have these digital detox snacks throughout our days.
Brilliant. Thank you very much for having me.
Well, that's all for today. Thanks again for joining me here on the Health Investment Podcast. I'm so grateful for each and every one of my listeners. On your way out, remember to hit subscribe so that you never miss an episode. See you next week. All content in this podcast was created for general informational purposes only by a non-physician. None of the content should serve as a substitute for professional medical advice, treatment, or diagnosis. Always consult a qualified health provider with any questions regarding a medical condition and before making changes to your diet, lifestyle, and/or exercise programs. Do not disregard any professional medical advice you have received or postpone seeking such advice because of something you heard on this podcast.